Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the junior senator from the state of Michigan, Alyssa Slotkin. Now, remember, we love taking your questions, so write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. In other exciting news, James Carville and Matt Tarnauer are taking Winning is Everything Stupid on the road. Join James for an exclusive meet-and-greet screening on the new documentary and an intimate Q&A session, including a signed copy of his book, The First Stop, February 19th, Athens, Georgia, the University of Georgia. Visit meetcarvilleathens.eventbrite.com. That's meetcarvilleathens.eventbrite.com to sign up, stupid. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Now tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Now please check out the links to our sponsors, Zbiotics, Beam, and Miracle Made in our show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. James, our guest, is the new senator from the state of Michigan. Senator Slotkin, we've been talking about you behind your back, so I think it's better if we say it to your face, which is that we think you're a rising superstar in the United States Senate. You won an election where in a state that Kamala Harris lost. You did well. You know a lot of stuff. You worked the CIA, the Defense Department, and boy, in those confirmation hearings, you've been tough. So if we can say it behind your back, we might as well say it to your face.
That's very nice. That's very nice. I appreciate that.
You warned that Defense Secretary Hegseth may be more loyal to Trump than the Constitution. Let's take it further. From what you have seen the past few weeks, do you think Donald Trump is committed to the Constitution or the rule of law?
You know, I don't know if it's because of the Supreme Court ruling, you know, in the last couple of years. I just feel like he's acting as if anything he does as president, is not against the law. That just by nature of being the president, he is not subject to normal law. And, we're about to find out because litigation is happening all over the place right now against many, many things that he's doing. And we will see if he upholds the law. And we will see if he listens to those court cases, if he adheres to them. I think if we're not there already, we're fast barreling towards a constitutional crisis, right? Do equal branches of the government have to follow the Constitution? Amazingly, that is an open question in the United States of America right now.
Well, again, just to go through all the stuff that you know and talked about so well, they declared that birthright citizenship is ended. They unilaterally shut down USAID. They fired, 17 inspectors general without telling Congress about it, ignored a judge's order to prohibit freezing of appropriated funds, came into the Treasury payment system, which five former secretaries say is a huge risk and danger. I mean, this is a constitutional crisis, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's now, there are court cases that are now pushing back on a lot of those things. Will he abide by the stays, the rulings that are coming out of those courts? And if not, then yes. I mean, we're in it. We're in it.
You have warned about Hegseth, Bobby Kennedy, Tulsi Gabbard. On deck is the FBI nominee, Kash Patel. Mm-hmm. William Webster, Republican, former FBI director, said he would devastate the Bureau. The FBI would not be what it has been for years if they confirm Kash Patel. I can't believe I'm asking this as a serious question, but I mean it. Are there legitimate fears, if Patel is confirmed, that we're really going to have a police state?
Well, look, they're already firing people, civil servants at the Department of Justice, FBI officers who were involved in investigations they didn't like. Whether they were assigned to those investigations willfully or not, they are getting rid of people who were quite literally just doing their job and upholding the law. Kash Patel has made very clear that he feels he can use that department to follow up on political, responses from the Trump administration against their adversaries, their enemies, people they don't like. And the FBI is the one body in the entire federal government that can actually take away the rights of another American citizen, right? They have arrest powers. They can prosecute. So I think that of all the nominations, I think that was one of the most catastrophic. And I just have to say, like, it has been kind of amazing for me as someone who's believes as much as possible that we should be working across the aisle, who won on the same ballot as Trump, watching my Republican colleagues roll over and just say, I know this is bad, privately have concerns, but then just vote in lockstep with the president. And it is a state of fear for elected Republicans right now. And they are aiding and abetting everything that is going on with their silence.
Boy, they sure are. You were a CIA agent in the Middle East, and you have said that Trump's proposal to take over to build beachfront condos in Gaza is ridiculous and absurd. You also are from a state where a lot of Arab Americans voted for Donald Trump. I guess it's sort of a twofold question. I mean, what do you hear? What are they telling you now? Do they realize maybe they were wrong? But secondly, why do you think Trump did this?
Well, I mean, look, I think it's hard to overstate how much pain and anger there was in many from our Arab American communities and Muslim American communities in Michigan. The number of people who have family members who were in the heat of that war in Gaza can't be overstated. And so that pain led them to, support someone that is now obviously showing his real colors. I mean, and the Gaza proposal, let's forget about it being illegal. Let's forget about trying to uproot 2 million people who were, many of them, already refugees from 1948. Let's forget about how unfeasible that is. I just want to put the marker down that this president is suggesting that U.S. forces be the occupying power in Gaza. I don't know a single American, Democrat or Republican, independent, who thinks that U.S. forces should go back into the Arab world, a conflict zone, after 20 years of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I, as someone who served in Iraq, I can't tell you what a bad idea this is. My guess is Netanyahu suggested it. Netanyahu doesn't trust the UN. He doesn't trust all these other places. He trusts the U.S. And Trump, without thinking, said it. Now he's doubling down. And so we are watching this very closely in the Armed Services Committee on a bipartisan basis, because it just, I think, would be a disaster all around.
Boy, James Carville.
Oh, Senator, thank you so much. And I'll go to my favorite topic, which is politics. And there, I think you and I have a very similar view of identity politics.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that the hangover from this hurt us in 2024, that we confronted voters and they still believed this. People famously, like John Stewart, said, oh, no, it wasn't a big deal because no one ran or everybody forgot about it. Do you think the shadow of identity politics had an adverse effect on Democrats running in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think a combination of things. One, I just think you don't have to believe me. Like, the data will show you that the idea that people vote in a certain way because of their racial or ethnic group is not right. It's changing, right? I mean, you look at what happened with Latinos and where we lost voters. And I think that idea of treating people as a block because of their ethnic or racial background does not work. It's just, and the data is there. Okay. That's number one. But number two, I think, we lost our sense of priorities. You know, if you're for everything, then people don't understand what you really stand for. And I think in a place like Michigan, where people were so focused on their pocketbooks, right? They were so focused on the economy that, yes, we talked about the economy, but we also talked about 12 other things, and it got lost. And, you know, I to me, you have to be ruthless in how you prioritize, and it has to be aligned with what the majority, not Twitter, not online, but what the majority of people, of citizens, are worried about. And I think people have so live in their echo chambers that there was a sense that, you know, all these other issues, which are important, right? I'm a Democrat for a reason. They are important. They just weren't number one, two, or three for the majority, at least of voters in Michigan. And we lost sight of that, and that's on us.
Right. And I think one of the really remarkably successful Democratic parties in the country is in Michigan, because we just don't have a lot of Democrats. We have a lot of women, a lot of female Democrats. I mean, an inordinate amount. And I think that's a testament to the good judgment of Democratic voters. I just want to make a disappointing observation. I think these people, the most racist thing that I hear is when people say communities of color, or people of color, because that assumes that everybody that is not white is the same, which is that, like, it's horribly, a horribly, I think it's racist to say, well, Filipinos are the same as Hondurans, are the same as Nigerians, are the same as Indonesians, is absurd. And they just keep using this language, and I think they're too naive to know how stupid it is. That's my own view.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, the data will show you that that's just, it's just not accurate, right? I mean, you think, you look at where, you know, some of our Muslim American communities voted, where some of our South Asian American families voted. I mean, it just, it doesn't work, at least in a state like Michigan. It's like a giant mixing bowl on political preferences. And if you, you know, think that you understand a community because of their country of origin, you're just, you haven't run in a swing state. I'll tell you right. That.
Well, okay. So if you are, please let us know, but I suspect that you're watching the events unfold in Michigan, particularly for Senator Peters' seat that's coming open. How many serious Democrats do you think are going to be vying for that? I'm really not at this point in your career, at this point in the cycle. You know, I'm just looking for an analytical assessment of what's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, look, Senator Peters, I was smiling and happy for him through gritted teeth when he decided that he didn't want to run again. He's been my mentor, you know, and someone who's helped me learn the Senate in these first 35 right. days. The good thing is Michigan has a bench. I mean, since 2018 or really 2016, we have built a strong bench. There's a lot of people that means good, healthy, old-fashioned American competition in primaries and in, you know, for competitive seats. So I'm talking to everybody. I think I've talked to 8 or 9 serious folks at this point. Everyone's, you know, talking to each other. It's definitely, and we also, for the first time in 110 years, have an open governor seat and an open Senate seat. So it's like big churn.
Right.
So we will get to, you know, a more whittled down list of people, but, the good news is we have a bench, and you couldn't say that in the same way 10 years ago.
We do, Ben. But am I right or wrong? I think the Senate nominating process is going to be a little involved in the gubernatorial. I'm not saying that not different people not going to run for the nomination, but doesn't it feel like at a distance, more Democrats would be contesting a Senate seat? Is that not necessarily true?
I mean, right now we have a number of Democrats already in for the governor's race. We have our mayor of Detroit running as an independent, which is, you know, change the dynamics on the ground. And we will have, I'm sure, multiple people running for the Senate seat. So I think it's going to be, you know, competitive primaries in both big races.
So I'm going to turn it right there. I just want to get a clarification. So the mayor of Detroit runs as an independent. Mm-hmm. He's on the general election ballot. So we have the so-and-so the Democrat, so-and-so the Republican, and the mayor of Detroit the independent. How can that help? I mean, just from an observation, that's pretty troubling to me.
Well, look, I mean, you know, the Mayor Duggan is someone who you can never count out. He's done amazing things in Detroit.
Right.
But there's no doubt about it. It's like I said, it's throwing the math into interesting new places. So right. we're going to have to watch. We still have, you know, almost 2 years before the election. So many things can happen before then.
We agree that this could end in not a particularly helpful way. Alvin, go ahead.
Senator, you're also on the Homeland Security Committee. Kristi Noem, the new secretary, suggested getting rid of FEMA. What do you think?
Well, considering that we had, you know, 6 tornadoes touch down in my state and have benefited to the tune of, $100 million from FEMA in recent years, I have a lot of concern about their plans. I have a lot of concern about what they plan to turn it into, and you better believe that our committee is going to have a lot to say about that matter, that and many other matters. But obviously, in the wake of hurricanes, Florida, North Carolina, fires, places like Michigan, tornadoes, South Dakota, her own state, needed FEMA assistance after historic floods. I'm deeply concerned about what that plan looks like, and we are eagerly awaiting something more than a talking point on that.
Back to your national security expertise, which is considerable, Ukraine. Defense Secretary Hegseth was over there this week, and he said, really, the Ukrainians, what they want is unrealistic. He was a welcome sign, I guess, to the Russians. Do you think we're in the process of selling out Ukraine?
Well, look, I think, you know, the only people more concerned about American elections than American citizens were the Ukrainians, because they were such diametrically opposed views coming out of the two candidates on what to do about Ukraine. I think most Americans, I hope, can understand what would happen if someone invaded our country, what we would do to protect our country, and that the Ukrainians are just trying to defend their country against an autocratic leader and government. And I think that President Trump has made very clear that he was going to shut off aid at some point to the Ukrainians, military aid. And he has said incredibly sympathetic things to Vladimir Putin consistently. I mean, since he was a candidate, almost like in a fanboy type way towards Putin, glorifying who he is. So I have deep concerns, and forcing them to negotiate giving away a piece of their country for the Ukrainians when they aren't in a militarily strong position is just asking for Putin to do more in Europe, right? If you don't push back on him, don't be surprised when he comes to NATO countries. And don't be surprised when the Chinese, who are taking notes on everything that's happening right now in Ukraine, they say, well, look, American will is just not strong. So if we go into a neighbor, they won't really do anything. It'll be temporary. Won't be a big deal. So I have deep concerns, not just about Ukraine and the poor Ukrainians, but what it means for Europe and what it means for overall sort of the threat to American, like not just American, just democracy.
And when you talk about the Chinese, you're talking about Taiwan.
Exactly. I mean, if you're the Chinese, you're saying to yourself, look, okay, huh, they did a little bit more in Ukraine than maybe we thought they'd do, but a new president comes in and they just cut it off. And so this seems like an easier opportunity for us, and that we won't meet with real serious American interests. If we shut off freedom of navigation, those kinds of things around the world, like Americans aren't going to defend, you know, freedom of navigation, no problem. It's just a problem. It sends the wrong signal.
Senator, let me steal from James's thunder and ask you one political question, then turn it back to him. How did you win in Michigan while Harris was losing? What was the difference?
Yeah, you know, I think a combination, as I mentioned before, we were laser focused on the economy, people's pocketbooks, people's kids. That's, we weren't talking about kind of 50 different issues. We were talking about the middle class as a national security issue. And the middle class is not, no one's looking to get rich. They're looking to have a good life and their kids have a better life than them. So we were very focused on costs, on bringing costs down, and on the economy in general. And then I think, you know, if I can be frank, just most of my outreach to people, let's say on TV or digital, was just me direct to camera being like, look, I'm running to be your next senator and here's why. Just very simple. And I think that you know, people understood that I had a slightly different background than the average Democrat, that the national security work was different. And then I was just speaking directly to them. I mean, it wasn't a lot of like big sweeping images of me on a stage. It was just like, I'm Alyssa Slotkin, I'm in my garage, and here's what I want to tell you I care about. So I think between the message and then the direct-to-camera approach, it helped us quite a bit with those Trump-Slotkin voters.
James.
So, all right. Well, I appreciate it so much. And I always point out to people that yourself, Senator Baldwin, Senator Rosen, and my friend now Senator Gallego, all won in states that we did not win the presidential vote, which is something that we should look at. And there are lessons to be learned there. And, of course, you and I know what the lesson to be learned is. Focus on people's lives, not on what progressive interest groups say that matter to people. But we have this issue of tariffs, and this has got to be ground zero in Michigan in the auto industry.
Yeah.
Tell us, what are you hearing from auto executives, and what are you hearing from the UAW? What's the cacophony, and what are you hearing out of the auto industry and the unions representing the auto industry?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I don't think anyone has a problem with tariffs per se in general as a tool in the toolkit. Just use it precisely like a scalpel, not a sledgehammer, right? And the tariffs that were announced but then suspended, whatever it was, 2 or 3 weeks ago, combined with the new suggestion on aluminum and steel, those tariffs, particularly on Canada, disproportionately impact the state of Michigan, our auto industry. We're a big manufacturing state. Some of our parts go back and forth 4 times across the border just to get put in a car. But then our farmers, our number one market for our farmers is Canada. So you better believe the agricultural folks are popping a flare.
Right.
The auto industry, look, I think there are deep concerns about what it will do to a price of a car. Again, for the administration that ran on costs, just think about, based on the tariffs we saw, a car that would have cost you $20,000 is probably going to cost you $26,000. That means people buy less cars. That means our jobs start being at risk. Like, you can see the cascade here, right?
Right.
From the industry on down, I think that there are concerns. There are plenty, including in labor, who say, look, tariffs in general, like, we have to do something, you know, China. And I hear that. Canada is different than China, right? For a million reasons. So the blunt stick approach is going to raise prices. And for some of my farmers, could put them straight up out of business.
Wow. What are the, aren't they, I'm trying to think of Michigan agriculture. There's a lot of produce grown in Michigan,
yes,
isn't there?
Specialty crops.
Is that
yes.
The specialty? I mean, it's more of that than big cornfields or wheat fields you see in other Midwestern states.
We always, we used to say that we were the second most diverse agricultural state in the country after California. You know, we do cherries and apples and asparagus and a whole bunch of potatoes, a bunch of things. We now say we are the number one most diverse agricultural state in the country with regular access to water. So we've changed the talking point. And we're not monocroppers like Kansas or Iowa. We don't do peanuts and rice down south. We don't do that. We have a diversity of small and medium-sized farms. We're proud of that. But it means we just can't afford to be losing market share around places like Canada. It is unnecessary.
Probably, I got to tell you one Michigan story from 92. Second debate was in Lansing, and we did the debate prep right outside of Ann Arbor. And it was cold, and I didn't bring a sweatshirt, and I run every day. So I went in the sundry shop, and I bought an amazing blue sweatshirt. I didn't think about it. I was just being warm. And so that day we go to Lansing, you know, there's a scrum of 2,000 people out in front of the hotel. And I walked out of there with that amazing blue shirt on it. Like, I'll never vote for that son of a bitch for the rest of my life. I mean, the Michigan State intensity is really remarkable. And I got a feel of it. And Clinton said, God damn it, are you that stupid? What are you doing?
It's especially in Lansing, home of Michigan State University, feels no offense, boneheaded to do. But I always explain to people that in Michigan, when we were growing up, you know, 48, my dad was a lifelong Republican. My mom, a lifelong Democrat. Used to be the most normal thing in the world growing up that families would have mixed political, views.
Oh, sure.
We were much more likely to fight Michigan versus Michigan State than we were Democrat versus Republican in the state of Michigan. People can't stand that we fight about politics now, that Thanksgiving dinner is uncomfortable. So I hope for the day when politics is again kind of something we re-rib each other on, and it's just the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry, or preferably Michigan-Ohio State rivalry, that causes people to come to near violence.
But
that's
there's no
my
argument
goal.
In Michigan about Michigan-Ohio State, is there?
No, no argument. We just, it's us versus Ohio, and we feel it in a visceral way in like every one of us in our DNA. Yes.
Well, if I were to ask you an unfair question, it would be, what was the most important day in November, the day you won the election or the day Michigan beat Ohio State?
I mean, I know the answer every Michigander besides my immediate family would say, the day we beat Ohio State. And they still haven't gotten over it. And they're like, coaching staff, I mean, they're literally traumatized by it. And you know what? I'm okay with that trauma.
Senator Slotkin, you have affirmed everything we said about you to start
Absolutely.
With. You are a fabulous guest. I hope you'll come back sometime. We'd like to keep talking to you.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Stay on your game with Z-Biotics. Well, let's try this. Suppose you're like me and you have New Year's Eve, then you have the Super Bowl, then you have Mardi Gras, then you have French Quarter Fest, then you have Jazz Fest, okay? I can hardly function without some intervention because, you know, particularly this time of year, and in Washington, Mary and I are going to be joining you and Judy at the big Gridiron Show, and I'm sure we'll have a rough day after that.
Oh, man, March 15th. We are so excited that you and Mary are coming. But, you know, it's not only that night. It's, let's face it, after a night with drinks, we usually aren't bouncing back the next day the way we used to when we were younger, James.
No.
So do you want a great night or a great next day or both? Luckily, with pre-alcohol, you don't have to compromise. To fill you in, Z-Biotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Now, here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, it gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that breaks this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Thanks to Z-Biotics, James can even go on long runs after his long nights. Every time you have a Z-Biotics pre-alcohol before a drink, it makes a big difference. So now, after drinks at a client dinner or whatever, a celebration, you can jump into action right after waking up. Whether you're writing all day, exercising, or even going in front of an audience, Z-Biotics is our MVP when it counts. Make sure it's in your lineup, too. Go to zbiotics.com/PWR to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use PWR at checkout. Z-Biotics is back with 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, head to zbiotics.com/PWR and use the code PWR at checkout for 15% off. The link also is in our show notes. Hey, James, I think it's fair to say that we warned what a Trump administration would be like. We were not naive. It would be much more effective and dangerous than Trump 1.0, populated with loyal sycophants. We cited the terrific New York Times stories by the great Maggie Haberman and Charlie Savage and others outlining Trump 2.0. You know something, James? It's worse. It's worse than we said. It's more lethal than we imagined. The appointments, the policies, the total disdain for the rule of law, the grifting. And beyond the grifting, Elon Musk is making a fortune. He's making a fortune with his co-presidency. The New York Times piece on Tuesday by Eric Lipton and Kirsten Grind. He is dismantling agencies and regulators that are in charge of 32 investigations or enforcement actions against companies that he owns. No conflict of interest there, right? Or take the pardons. A Tennessee congressman, a former Nebraska Republican congressman, Republicans, no consultation with prosecutors. And New York's Mayor Adams, the nefarious mayor of New York City, under indictment. What they did is they basically suspended the indictment with the ability to bring it back again. And they said they did it so he could carry out Trump's policies on immigration. I've never heard of a pardon given for that reason. They own Eric Adams now for the next 10 months. And I say 10 months because I'm confident he will never be reelected. He's been a terrible mayor. And the guy who did this, Emil Bove, who was, I guess, well, the number three guy at Justice. James, look at him. He looks like Roy Cohn. He really does look like Roy Cohn. He's probably not as smart, but maybe he has the same ethics. So far, the courts are a bulwark. But what happens when he tells the court to go put it where the sun don't shine? I don't know. Will congressional Republicans finally stand up? I doubt it. They are determined to intimidate, and they do it in such a sleazy way. This week, Elon Musk tweeted out a Laura Loomer post with a picture and address of the daughter of one of the judges who issued a restraining order against one of Trump's illegal orders. In other words, namely, here's the daughter. Go give her a hard time. You know, Steve Bannon said, flood the zone with all kinds of shit, and the press is incapable of keeping up. Maybe he's right.
Yeah. First of all, don't forget Rod Blavich. Trump is a criminal. Criminals like to be around other criminals.
And a mob boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bannon is right. We are flooded in shit, and we are searching for a way to deal with this. These are extraordinarily difficult times, and he keeps moving with one stupid thing after another. Tom Friedman, who said today that, of course, obvious the Gaza proposal is the dumbest thing an American president has ever come up with in the Middle East. That, of course, 100% true. Thank you. Panama Canal, Greenland. My favorite is the country of my great-grandfather's birth, and I've been to the house he grew up in, Copenhagen. It's now saying they're going to buy California. And I'm telling the Danes, I'll chip in.
You know, James, wait a minute. How about giving them, I don't know, Idaho, or, other place?
The point is, we have these conversations. We talk to people on the phone. We go to cocktail parties and dinners, and we have things. When you sit back and see, when you take it one by one, it's so much crazier then you can imagine that we're having this discussion. And one of the dangers that we have is we just become like, it just becomes elevator music or something.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you accentuate. Do you oppose one thing? Do you oppose all five? Is it a personnel issue? Is it a policy issue? Maybe some of our well, I'm struggling here a little bit, so maybe some of our really smart viewers can help us untangle a little bit. But it's really tangled now because no one knows where to land. It's all too incomprehensible.
Yeah, it is, and I think what Bannon said was that the press can never keep up, and I think some of the press, the New York Times, some of the even the downsized Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal broke that terrific story about the Musk aide. But I think there needs to be more effort. The Bulwark does great work on that, too. I really do believe that there needs to be more oppositional institutions set up. The lawyers are doing okay, but there's so many things. Let me give you an example. We focus on the top tier and how bad Patel and Bobby Kennedy and Hegseth and Gabbard are. But where do you see the second, third, and fourth? I mean, just a couple examples. The spokesman at the Defense Department is going to be Sean Parnell. He was a Pennsylvania congressional and Senate candidate who had to drop out because in a custody battle, the judge said his wife was right. He had assaulted her and gave custody of their children to her. I mean, that's now the top spokesman at the Pentagon. I guess he'll probably bond well with Hegseth. And Darren Beatty is the undersecretary for public diplomacy. He was fired from the first administration for associating with white nationalists. That's a calling card now. Joe Kent has been named the head of the National Terrorism Center. He also was an unsuccessful candidate who associated with white nationalists and said January 6 prisoners were political prisoners and that he called for defunding the FBI. It's the head of the Terrorism Center. And finally, Marco, what's his name? Alex or whatever it is, Musk trooper, was initially fired for bragging he was a racist before it was cool. I was cool before it was cool to call someone a racist. Then he was reinstated, and Musk criticized the Wall Street Journal reporter who broke the story. You know, James, they're going to be a lot more like this, a lot more like this.
Just remember, Trump had dinner at Mar-a-Lago with Nick Fuentes and Yee, okay? There's nothing, it's like we say, well, you're right to point out the Deputy Secretary for Public Affairs or the this or that, you know, that the tentacles just go right down. The tentacles start at the top. When the president, former president of the United States and current president of the United States invites Nick Fuentes to dinner, is there anything that you can say? And I don't know, maybe a talented musician. I don't think anybody would say he's a model of sanity in the United States. We're getting overwhelmed. And it things that we thought that would kill a political career, that would be poisonous for whatever reason, this guy keeps trugging along.
And that's why I think there have to be opposition organizations that step up. I mean, not Democratic Party, organizations, but more bulwarks, more groups like this, because there is so much stuff going on. I will say that I think it's possible that they may have peaked in February. The polling numbers, everyone talked about the CBS poll with 53%, and you know how good that was. Most of the others, Marquette, The Economist, Pew, all having 47 or 48. That's not terrific for a new president. And I think that some of his executive actions are not only being stifled in the courts, but are probably unpopular with some of the public. And in the next week or two, James, the budget and tax issues are going to be joined. And there are lots of vulnerabilities. Just look at the congressional Republicans. The House Republican leadership and the Senate Republican leadership and the Conservative Freedom Caucus in the House all have different approaches on the budget and reconciliation. And they're going to be very hard to reconcile. And when they do, they're going to end up giving a lot of tax cuts to the rich. They're going to try to have a fig leaf or two, which hides it. And they're going to cut a lot of stuff for working class people, Medicaid. And they're going after the lower drug prices. So I think that the first month is the easiest for him. I think it's going to become much harder now.
Okay, so I will talk about the CBS poll. Yesterday, a friend of mine, when I was sitting here, I left the TV on MSNBC at a call. They could not stop citing the CBS poll. I don't know why MSNBC is they cherry pick it, all right, because that, I don't know, outlier people say, but that certainly is on it, more than just a little bit on the high side of Trump approval, but for some reason or another, the powers to be at MSNBC think we should talk about this poll and this poll exclusively. I'd love to know the rationale of their thinking.
I would too.
I don't know it. And I'm going to ask you about this, that I think, when do they have to vote on the debt extension? And just tell people very briefly what this is and what are the consequences of this vote.
Well, what they did is they extended the debt ceiling over the opposition of some conservative Republicans. Trump wants to do away with it. He's actually right about that, but it's not going to happen. And at some, you know, it's always difficult because the Treasury can do all kinds of games. But at some point in the next month or so, they have got to increase the debt ceiling or we run out of money. And if they don't, we're going to have to default. And that's going to be one hell of a fight because the right wingers in the House are going to say, we only will go along with this if you do make these kinds of actions and cuts that a few moderate Republicans and all the Democrats won't go along with. I mean, the one thing is he's not going to get any Democratic votes on this stuff. So it's going to be a really hard time the next month or two, James.
Now, is the majority down to one because Hochul is not calling the Stefanik seat till November?
Yeah, that's uncertain when she'll have that. You know, there's talk about that. But right now, when they will elect two, I mean, right currently, it is 218 to 215, I believe. And when Stefanik resigns, if she does go to the UN, it's 217. But Florida's going to elect two Republicans probably in April. So that'll take us to 219 to 215. But that means they can only lose one vote until that New York seat is filled. And even when that's filled, they can only lose two votes. And yeah, people talk about some of the moderates. I don't know who they are, but the real threat may come from the right wing because they don't care
what
Trump's.
Yeah, they got Tom Massey and Chip Roy and that ilk to
exactly.
deal with. I mean, of course, you know, you can fool all of the people some of the time, but some of the people all of the time. You can't fool the bond market none of the time.
Right.
And God damn it, they're powerful.
Whew. Yeah.
They're going to pull something out here, it seemed to me.
Well, at some point, you know, it's going to come to hit them. I don't know when. I don't know if it'll be, you know, my friend Roger Altman says he's not sure. Could be this year. Could be next year. Could be this summer. But at some point, it's going to hit them. And when it hits them, man, look out.
By the way, inflation, so Trump said he'd get it down from day one. Well, okay. We're way past day one.
Well, first target he's missed, right? Of course, now he'll blame it on Biden.
Yeah,
but anyway. But tough times ahead. All right, great.
Get the rest you deserve with Beam Dream. Ooh, man, I'll tell you something. A good night's sleep like I had last night is everything in the world. And the Beam Dream helps you sleep. But just as important, it actually tastes good. It actually tastes good. This is a great product. It's relaxing, it's soothing, and it helps you get a good night's sleep. And just as important as anything, it actually tastes good.
We've all had a lot of sleepless nights, particularly after this last election. But it's time for all of us to get rested up so we can take on 2025. Remember, good sleep is the foundation of mental and physical health. Whether you're a podcaster out in the elements or in an office, it can make all of the difference. That's why it's so exciting to talk about Beam's Dream Powder. A science-backed, healthy, hot cocoa for sleep is actually clinically shown to improve sleep and have you waking up refreshed. Everything changed when we found Dream, and let me tell you, it works. Now you can finally say goodbye to grogginess, start sleeping through the night, and wake up refreshed. Once we started getting better sleep, we realized our energy and focus came back fast. Now, we're tackling our days instead of just getting through them. And boy, do we have a lot to tackle. This bedtime essential is delicious, decadent, and guilt-free. Thanks to only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar per serving. You'll love flavors like sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and the Beam Dream Powder original flavor, cinnamon cocoa. That is a top-notch favorite. Other sleep aids can cause next-day grogginess, but Dream contains an all-powerful, all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin, to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Looking ahead to 2025, we're determined to keep this momentum going, and making Dream a part of your nightly routine makes all the difference. Just mix Dream into hot water or milk, froth, and enjoy before bed. Now, if you want to try Dream's best-selling Dream Powder and get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/warroom. Use the code warroom at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/warroom and use the code warroom for up to 40% off. The link is in our show notes. Hey, now for my outrage of the week. It's not going to be an outrage because there's so much to be outrageous about. We're talking about throughout the show, and I'll be back next week with one. And I want to say I have mixed views about cable news these days, despite having spent years on a program that I love. The finest journalist anchoring a cable show, Andrea Mitchell, is stepping down after 17 years as an MSNBC anchor. Andrea is a reporter's reporter, more into shoe leather than opinions. She has an incredible array of sources. She is always reliable. There is no one better. Fortunately, she will focus now on in-depth diplomatic and domestic reporting for NBC News. There never has been a time that we more needed great journalism. In challenging times as citizens, we are incredibly fortunate to have Andrea Mitchell, reporter extraordinaire.
Well, you know, we disagree with things, you know, not all the time, but sometimes for sure on the show, sometimes this is something that we do not disagree on. Andrea is a totally competent, totally thorough, totally talented news person. And, you know, she's got a career ahead of us. And thank God she's going to be using that talent and all the multiple sources and contacts she has to do some more in-depth reporting. So we're lucky to still have her around. For me, we're celebrating people that are retiring because, you know, this is the next to the last thing you do after you retire. The next thing you do is you go to funerals, unfortunately. But we both know that state parties can matter. There's some are better than others. Some are more important. Some do a better job. No state party stands superior to the Virginia state party. And Susan Schwecker, my dear friend, is stepping down after 10 years at the helm of the Virginia State Party, and she's leaving that party in really good shape and, in my opinion, almost a gut cinch to win the governor's race in November of this year. And it's a very important race. It's very important that we pay very close attention to this because this is the first time that voters are going to be able to weigh in on what is happening here. And I've talked to Susan, and let's say they are getting a lot of volunteer requests from federal employees, and we'll just leave it at that. But congratulations, Susan, on a remarkable string of successes. But just as importantly, you leave us with a big lead in first place in the governor's race.
Boy, James, I totally agree. Susan Schwecker, Virginia, Ben Wickler of Wisconsin is kind of like Caitlin Clark and LeBron James. They are the most valuable. They are fabulous. They have done a great job, and they both are in challenging states. Virginia's gotten more Democratic in large part to people like Susan. But, they are the best.
Right. Sleep clean and comfortable with Miracle Made. Ooh, man, you can't believe it because this good night's sleep, and we talk about this all the time, and the temperature, the ambient temperature, the temperature they are makes all the difference in the world. And these sheets are the closest thing to you while you're sleeping, and it's going to make a world of difference in the quality of sleep you get. It really is.
Sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day. Now, if you wake up too hot or too cold, we highly recommend you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. Miracle Made sheets are inspired by NASA and use silver-infused thermoregulating fabrics, so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night, no matter how high the heater is set. Plus, the silver lining prevents 99.7% of bacterial growth, which means Miracle Sheets require three times less laundry because they stay clean and fresh three times longer. Your bed will feel freshly made every night. Stop sleeping on bacteria that can clog your pores and cause breakouts and even acne. Sleep clean with Miracle instead. Trust us, no more gross odors. Life is going to be a whole lot better for your household. The NASA-inspired temperature-regulating silver-infused fabrics truly give you maximum comfort in any weather. And they make pillowcases and comforters, too. Now, join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle Sheets luxuriously comfortable, they don't have the high price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle Sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some five-star hotels. So it's a vacation every time you get into bed. Upgrade your sleep this year. Go to trymiracle.com/warroom to try Miracle-made sheets today. Whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo, WARROOM, at checkout, you'll get a free three-piece towel set and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's back with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/warroom and use the code WARROOM to claim your free three-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/warroom to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode, and look for the link in our show notes. Now for our listener questions. Boy, I tell you, you can tell they're juiced up, James. They really are juiced up. You look at the questions now. Gary in Calvert, Maryland. I know a little bit about Calvert, Maryland. Yeah. He said, why is DOGE being given credibility when it's not a real government department?
There's nothing real about any of these people. You're right. It's not a real government department. You know, what's happened is we're just getting so overwhelmed with craziness, you hardly know who to pick off. And, of course, they haven't given us one concrete thing yet. You know, they started with, there was $50 million in condoms for Hamas, which, of course, they had to walk back because it's not true.
Wasn't true.
And what's the expression I'm looking at? It's all strum and drang. It's just noise. That's it. Noise. And it's going to continue to be. And, you know, Musk having his press event with Trump and his kid. It's just, we're in a very sad, difficult time. And, you know, we'll have to think long and hard we'll get out of it. What is the quickest and best way to get out? That's the question before us.
Gary, James is right. I think it's illegal, much of what they're doing. I think the courts are going to rule such, and we'll see if they obey those rulings. That's the big question.
He's already said they don't have any intention of filing any of this. I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, the court can say what it wants. I think these people have completely lost. Look at who he pardoned. He's a criminal. What is Eric Adams? Well, we know Blagojevich is a criminal. Right. And we, you know, to be fair, Eric Adams is not even going to get to trial that I think would prove he's a criminal. But it's breathtaking. Breathtaking.
Right. It is.
There's just no other way to it.
Alan in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, says, with Donald Trump running amok, no House or Senate Democrat willing or able to oppose him effectively, is there some strategic reason why one of our potential 2028 presidential candidates can't begin to speak out? Alan, you're ahead of yourself. We don't focus on 2028. We focus on 2025, 2026. Democrats were terribly despondent at this time in 2025 after they lost an election they thought they were going to win, 2005. The key was not getting Barack Obama to speak out. I think the Senate and House Democrats will more rise to the occasion than you do, and I think they're going to have plenty of opportunities. And I do think we need, you know, better and better funded and more outspoken outside groups. But 2028 is down the road.
So this, the question that's been asked is, of course, what I've been wrestling with. I'm working on a collecting something and trying to put it together for peace. I would say we need to be here. These are, as we say, during the Revolutionary War, times to try men's souls. And I keep coming back to the fact, had George Washington not retreated from Long Island, Princeton would probably be known as an adjunct campus of Oxford University. All right, sometimes the smartest strategy you can do is to fall back and deal with it at the right time. I know this goes against what people want, what they feel. It goes against my emotions. We have to fight these bastards. We have to fight on everything, every. And just look what happened. And, you know, people said, well, maybe Bobby Kennedy will get through, or maybe Tulsi Gabbard will get through, or maybe some other horribly unqualified person. The moderate, sensible, conservative principle, they do not exist. The only cavalry is us. And we have to be sure that when we pick this fight, you know, what happened the first day at Gettysburg? We fell back, but we kept the high ground. And we have to figure a way to get our ammunition, artillery pieces in place to get this job done. And our dear friend General Ty Sedgwick reminded me of Marine Corps General Oliver Smith, who said as they were pulling back from Chosin Reservoir, he said, we're not retreating, we're just advancing in a different direction. I think we need to advance in a different direction. Yeah, a very thoughtful question.
John in Gurnee, Illinois says, what would happen? This is, I don't think, just a mere hypothetical question. What would happen if Trump refused to follow court decisions, especially if the Supreme Court decides against his plan? Who gets held responsible? What happens?
The best thing about this program is how intelligent and how insightful the questions are. And of course, this guy, he's from Michigan, you said?
He's from Gurnee, Illinois.
Gurnee, Illinois. That is the question. And we don't know. And I'm not at all be surprised if he just ignores court orders. I really wouldn't be. He's utterly lawless, and he loves other lawless people. Why should he follow the law? He's broken the law his whole life and has gotten around it. He's not going to comply, I don't think. But it's a good question. But it's not going to be a hypothetical. We're going to find out, I suspect. Or what will happen is, the Supreme Court will just go along. They'll be, you know, just like Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. They'll talk a game and then they won't play the game. This is
disgusting. Murkowski's been better than Collins, but I think you're right. And I think that the question is, if he doesn't disobey court orders, are the court willing to impose tough sanctions, fines, penalties, other things?
They don't care.
That's an open.
Go enforce it. What are you going to do? You know, I got the army. You know, I'm not being a jerk here. I just don't have any. I'd have no institutional faith anymore.
By the way, just as an historical fact, it's often said that Andrew Jackson said about Chief Justice John Marshall, he has rendered his decision, now let's see him enforce him. Actually, Jackson never said that. It's a good apocryphal story, but I would not, I think Trump is more likely to say and do something like that.
Jackson is a very controversial person in history, and there were certainly, to be mild, some things about Jackson's career that were not admirable. Horrible, but Eileen is pro-Jackson for one reason. He wanted to goddamn hang John C. Calhoun, and anybody that wanted to hang John C. Calhoun can't be all that bad.
Madeline, and next door to South Carolina, she's in Greenville, North Carolina.
Right.
She said, with all the Trump executive orders coming, are there legal strategies to defend against these, and is this being done? Yes, it is. There really are. I mean, the legal community has really risen to the order. I think there are all kinds of suits going on. Lawyers are being dispatched everywhere. And the son of our great dear friend, Walter Dellinger, Hampton Dellinger, who is a Justice Department official appointed for a 5-year term to run special counsels, not the investigative part, but to look at the ethical questions. They try to fire him, and he's challenging it. He's got a great lawyer. He's a great lawyer. So I think the legal counters are in good shape. I think other things are more worrisome. But the top lawyers in America, our friend Seth Waxman being one of them. But 3 cheers for Hampton Dellinger. I thought some of these people who were fired illegally from their jobs and then just said, okay, I'll go away and won't create trouble. That was a mistake. Hampton is challenging it, and he'll win, I think, James.
I don't share your optimism. I share your admiration for people like Hampton Dellinger, certainly for Seth Waxman. Good lawyers in front of bad judges don't make a shit. I don't think like they read the law. I don't think they read the briefs, okay? I think that they just are, for the most part, for God's sakes, I'm not saying every judge is the same, but 95% of these Republican judges, and look at them, the Calvary is not coming. A good lawyer faces a bad lawyer in front of a bad judge, the bad lawyer is going to win.
Well, you may be right, James, but there have been a Reagan-appointed judge, a Trump-appointed judge, who have ruled against the administration. And don't forget, in 2020, the key decisions in Pennsylvania and elsewhere were made by Trump-appointed judges. There certainly are. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to Texas anywhere and bring a case.
Somewhere the Supreme Court does something. I hope I'm wrong. Look.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't. You know, I we have great lawyers, but we, for the most part, I mean, with something obvious like the 14th Amendment, that's one that they're probably going to lose, but that's only an 80% chance they're going to lose it. And when you read the text of the 14th Amendment, please tell me how can you lose that? I don't think I could lose that case, but that's how clear it is.
Mary Ann in Charlotte, North Carolina, says, is Trump compromised by foreign governments and does his relationship with them affect policy? I mean, James, does a bear go to the bathroom in the woods?
Right. Oh, you sweet person. The problem is they've conflicted with so many of them. It's going to be hard to see which way he goes. And the Trump policy is so ill thought out. Now he is putting a tariff on Brazilian steel. Well, Brazilians, I think I'm right on this, is not the largest, or certainly one of the largest customers of U.S. coal, of Brazilian steel plants. He doesn't have any idea of what he's doing. None. And it's all going to blow up in his face.
Hey, thanks for those questions. Please keep them coming in. We love your questions. If we didn't get to them this week, send them again, and we'll try next week. They are so good. Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, ZBiotics, Beam, and Miracle Made, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel, or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.